Services Committee to order. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Absolutely. Chair Kovacs.
Present.
Deputy Chair Levine.
Here.
Legislator Gavaris.
Present.
Legislator Harmon.
Here.
Legislator Hanson. Legislator Kitchen. And Legislator Uchitel.
Present.
You have 5 members present, 2 absent.
Thank you. Before we go to the agenda, I just want to say make a few comments. I know there are a lot of experienced legislators in this room, at this table, anyone of which could be sitting up here. I'm deeply honored to serve as committee, as chair of this committee, and I trust that I can count on our institutional knowledge and professional courtesy of all of our members as we make it through this year. I especially want to acknowledge our legislative chairman, Peter Criswell. Peter took the bold step of appointing me first year legislator as chairman, and I'm personally grateful for the opportunity. I've been impressed with his commitment to bipartisanship, his goal to resolve differences amicably, and I look forward to working with him this year. With that, I'm going to conclude saying anything additionally nice about Mr. Criswell. I don't want to get him in any trouble. To prepare for this meeting, I attended 2 committee meetings in the past week. Public Works Committee, chaired by Legislator Nolan, of which I am a member, and the Law Enforcement Committee, chaired by Legislator Hanson, who will be here shortly. I was particularly impressed with their professionalism of both chairs and how they conduct their meetings. And it's my goal to chair this committee in their similar style. This is day 39 of my legislative career, and I fully admit I have lost breath. I'm grateful to our clerk and her staff, who since day one have been incredibly helpful, not only to me, but the 7 other new legislators, which is a significant number. I especially want to thank this committee's deputy clerk, Jim Mahler, who has a tremendously difficult job keeping me alive. So thank you for your help. Finally, I'm grateful to be in this room with all of you. We are blessed to live in a country where we can resolve our differences at a table, peacefully, without resorting to violence or war. A quick look around the world tells us that this is not always the case. Like many of our fellow Ulster County residents, I have 1 parent who was not born in the United States. My father was fortunate to be able to immigrate here from Eastern Europe, and where he pursued the American dream. And to see his son serve as a public official is truly an embodiment of that dream. So let's get started. Approval of December 18th, 2023 meeting minutes.
I'll move approval of the December 18th, 2023 meeting minutes.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Minutes approved. Resolution number 38, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 1 of 2024, a local law amending Article 3, Hotel and Motel Occupancy Tax of the Code of the County of Ulster in relation to determination of taxable rent to be held on Tuesday, March 19th, 2024 at 7:00 p.m.
I will move the resolution for discussion.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Carries. Discussion. Senator Maloney.
This is something we talked about. I think we finished up a vote short, and if everybody had attended the last legislative session, I think this would have been, this amendment would have passed. I guess there's been a working group working on it, whatever that is. You know, that's something we're going to have to talk about going into the future separately from this committee, I suppose, or maybe it should be in this committee, laws and rules. But I put up a resolution 2 years ago to raise the bed tax. I then put up a resolution to amend the bed tax after it got back from New York State, and now there's a secret working group that's meeting that doesn't even include or tell me that they're meeting, and in the last minute I get an amendment that I'm fine with. It's just bizarre that the legislator putting up the resolutions have another group of legislators secretly meeting and not telling any other legislators about it, and then presenting the person that put all the resolutions up with some last minute changes. Not sure that's what the way this is all supposed to work. That being said, we have the language here, and it's, we've added non-passive activity, but it's still the 20% of 80%. So I have no issue with that non-passive activity language. So if that's something, does this need to be passed? Should we amend this in Ways and Means? Is there a difference?
You can do it here.
Yeah. And it doesn't change the timeline or anything like that. If the committee's okay with it, I'm, as a sponsor, I'm certainly okay with the.
So, Leslie, Hill, just to clarify, you are accepting these amendments, and you wish to have them incorporated as part of your resolution?
Yes.
It'd actually be incorporated as part of the local law with the resolution is for the public hearing. So I'd like to express my deep appreciation to Legislator Maloney for anticipating the need for a public hearing on the local law, and expressed my lack of awareness that he had put this resolution in. So I did not know that he was continuing the work that he had done previously on the increase in the overall tax rate. The legislature had discussed setting up a working group to establish a process for making amendments, and so that's what this working group was. I believe it was announced that the working group is working, and we had meetings that people could have asked to attend. I'm sorry that you were unaware. I was not aware that you were unaware. And I greatly appreciate that in that context you were willing to talk with members of the working group and accept the recommendations that we were coming up with. The main difference between the law as Legislator Maloney submitted it and what the working group is recommending is that instead of simply striking the old rate for the category room, breakfast, lunch, dinner, and other charge and replacing that with a lower rate, we kept that previous line and have added a additional category in which more than one non-passive activity would get the reduced rate. That reduces the number of entities that would likely qualify, and so it reduces the fiscal impact for the county. And we added the definition of that non-passive activity so that that would prevent people from doing something cursory, putting an extra chocolate on the pillow or a mug in the room and trying to qualify for this additional for the decrease in the lodging percentage. The plan would be that the clerks were advising me that it might be better to amend in Ways and Means because that is the committee of origin for this particular law and resolution, but I'm agnostic on that. I was going by what the clerks advised me. I don't think it's wrong for this committee to go ahead and make the amendments and then approve the resolution with the law as amended. And the working group will meet again and come up with a way to document what the process was that we went through so that if some other entities come to the county saying we deserve a different rate, that they will know what it is that the county would like to do in order to address that kind of concern. So we tried to build in a process in addition to having legislators being willing to put resolutions in for the benefit of their constituents in the county.
May I make a suggestion? When you have those working group meetings, would you just let Mr. Lloyd know about them?
Absolutely.
Well, the entire legislature.
You're allowed, even better. Yeah.
Besides the five members that are being told personally by the chair that they're going to be involved in this working group.
Okay. I think letting the entire legislature know might be a good idea. Yes, sir.
A couple things. One is I'm glad that we're being clear-eyed that this is creating a process for specific businesses to come and petition the legislature that they want a different deal that will affect only those specific businesses. It sounds like we're clear-eyed about that. I am curious if we know what the fiscal impact of this is going to be. I'm sure the county executive's office would have feedback that I would love to hear if we can hear from them. about what this adjustment would mean from a fiscal standpoint. I will add that I also know we all sound like broken records, but I would very much like to have Legislator McCulley included in these conversations. I do want to, you know, commend that he's been working on this in non-consecutive terms for almost a decade now, and I would want to be included if it was something I cared this strongly about, and so I really hope that we can include him and anyone else because that's important to me. And I appreciate that this does seem to close what could be a loophole. These amendments close what could be a loophole with other types of hotels coming out because they want to pay a lower rate. It feels like we have two very important businesses in our community, and I get that we want to take care of them. It feels a little bit uncomfortable how narrowly we're crafting this for these businesses, but I recognize how significant they are in our community, and I'm not inclined to stand in the way of a public hearing. Two quick things. One, I think this is better than nothing. I do think we should probably revisit if this does pass in a couple of months. Maybe the comptroller can help us out. Years ago, the comptroller's office did an audit on this and found that there were hotels manipulating our language to get out of the 2%. I think there was a bed and breakfast or a hotel that was right next to a bagel shop, and when you stayed there, you got a free bagel in the morning, and they were paying. They were using this equation, and it was not meant. So there's an enforcement aspect to it. I do think this language helps and maybe gives us a little bit of teeth to go and stop it, but we don't even know what some of these businesses are doing. So while we clean this up, we may be able to treat these two big employers fairly. At the same time, go and get these other people to pay the way they should and actually end up better off than we were. The other thing I'll point out is when we do get these numbers from the executive, I think we should remember that we were at 2%, that all inclusives were already at the rate that this brings them back to. So it's no loss. It was going to be more going forward, but we've never got this money from the all-inclusives. So all we're doing is keeping it the same. So I wouldn't say it's how much money we're losing. It's how much more we would have gained had we essentially charged the 4% bed tax on horseback riding, skiing, and other things, which was never the intent, I don't believe, of the bed tax. So, but I think the language is good, and it's better than not having it. And I think all I'm saying is going into the future, let's make sure we don't need to do even more. But this is what we've been, this is going to be better than what we had for sure.
So the working group learned a lot about how this all works, and it's exactly as Legislator Maloney is saying. The operators basically self-determine which category they fall in, and then they can be audited, and that we haven't gotten full details, but it doesn't sound like that is a continuous ongoing process. And maybe it was because a prior audit showed that most operators were correctly identifying where they should fall in this scheme. It's not exactly correct that this is tailored for these two, for two all-inclusives. There are six all-inclusives that come up on a Google search of Ulster County for all-inclusives. The operators that we did speak with, who are the two largest, anticipated, and I think thought that we might go in a way that we would be addressing all six of those operators. We felt that there were differences between the two largest and the others who count under our current scheme as all-inclusives because they have one other charge. Some of those other amenities have included things like hiking trails. And the large, so we're getting into a lot of the substance of the law, which we can do after the public hearing as well, but the largest operators showed very convincing evidence of the range and scale of activities. They only included in their expenses, for the purposes of trying to figure out these percentages, their operating costs, not their capital costs. So the new category is intending to focus on operating costs with non-passive activities. So if somebody builds a hiking trail once, they don't get to qualify every year for this reduction. So we're taking a deeper look than I think was taken in 1991 or any time since. And by going ahead and moving forward tonight, we get this public hearing. We have done some rough calculations of what we think the impact will be, and I agree with Legislator Maloney, we're not talking about losing money, we're talking about maybe some venues not falling under the new increase, and I'm estimating that that will come in the range of a few $100,000. We're trying to get that information. There are some antitrust issues that come up because we have two entities that can't collude in setting prices, and they actually advised us of that when we spoke with them. They did not want to speak with us at the same time in front of each other. And so we're checking on that too to see if that limits the information that we're able to get. But we want to have all that before we make a final decision on this law. Tonight, Legislator Maloney anticipated the need to have a public hearing on the law, and I think we've come to a pretty quick consensus of where we could be for 2024. So that's what we're asking for at this time.
Further discussion?
Maybe it's because I'm new around here. But do we have any sense if we're talking about who oversees this? What is there the person power available to keep track of the thing, right? Like, because it sounds to me like maybe there is not. And I would be concerned if we're just making a lot of pronouncements that we can't actually, right? Because every mom knows, don't say it unless you are going to follow through with it, right? Can we follow through?
Well, the system that we're working under is established in 1991, and the consensus seems to be that since then, for the past more than 30 years, it's worked pretty well. I don't know the answer to your question in terms of how deeply we've assessed that to know how secure that belief is. And Legislator Maloney is pointing us to the Comptroller's Office, I think also the Finance Department, the Fiscal Clerk, Amber Feaster, who has been instrumental in helping the working group understand and move forward on this, is asking those questions of those departments, and so we hope to be able to bring that to the legislature. Again, by getting this scheduled, we then have the opportunity for the public to speak on it, maybe the operators to give us more information as they did last year during the public hearings on the 2% to 4% increase, and then we can have more detailed conversations. We also want to get the operators to look at our excerpts of what they presented us and okay it in terms of confidentiality issues for us to circulate that report from the working group to the whole legislature.
Thank you.
Any further discussion?
We need a motion
to adopt
the amendment as presented.
I'll make the motion to adopt the resolution as amended.
Motion by Legislator Link. Is there a second? Second by
Legislator Hanson.
It's the amendment first.
Adopt the amendment on the law.
And then as amended.
Both would work.
Interpreted resolution as local law.
But I think the question is, do we need a separate motion for the amendment, or can we adopt
that's what you're voting on now.
Okay.
Amending the local law as presented, then we'll need a motion to adopt the resolution with the local laws.
I will make the motion to amend the local law.
Second.
Okay. Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, motion passes. Is there another motion?
I will now make the motion to amend the resolution. To adopt the resolution with the local law as amended.
Is there a second?
Second.
Second. Any further discussion? All questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? Seems on? Gracias. Thank you. Resolution.
We don't do too many.
resolution number 72, appointing Sarah Peter J. Pickrell as Ulster County Legislative Member to serve on the County Jury Board.
I will make that motion to discuss.
Any discussion? I just want to say I reviewed the judiciary law, and it says explicitly that a member of the county legislature shall be designated to serve on the jury board, provided that no such member of the legislature shall be designated if he or she engages in the practice of law. So I am excused. any further discussion? Another motion?
Move it.
Moved by Legislator Patel. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Second. Any further discussion?
As long as the chair is willing and able.
Yeah, right. I doubt they need more than one to hear. But I could be wrong. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? Resolution is adopted. Turning to new business, Ulster County sexual harassment policy. I have a comment to make at the outset. I want to give the committee some background as to why this was included on the agenda. As all of us know, there were a couple articles in the Daily Freeman last month that referenced sexual harassment allegations against a county official. And the articles further went on to say, and I quote from the Daily Freeman, Ulster County knew about sexual harassment complaints against this individual for at least 8 months before this person's resignation, end quote. There's a follow-up article a few days later that referenced a press release from the minority leader of the legislature and some additional comments from the county executive. One of our main jobs as legislators is to look into, review, and investigate the operations of county government. As the Human Rights Commission falls under the jurisdiction of this committee, I made the proactive decision to write a letter to the county executive on February 1st, inviting her or a representative from her office to come to our committee meeting today and discuss the executive office's response to these allegations. Immediately copied all committee members with my letter to the executive. We do not conduct oversight of county operations or county government based on reading newspaper articles or press releases. We conduct oversight by holding hearings, interviews, by looking at primary documents. With that being said, I do appreciate the deputy county executive being here today on behalf of the executive, and I look forward to hearing from her. Is there any discussion?
Okay, great. So thank you for having me today. My name is Jamie Capizano, for those who don't know me, Deputy County Executive. So I'm going to go through today is a little bit of the background. I'm going to go through a timeline as well. And I'm also going to discuss some recommended changes that we think are needed to Ulster County sexual harassment policy. And I do believe everybody has a copy of the current sexual harassment policy. Perfect. Okay, I'll wait for it to go around. So just kind of starting with the facts and a little bit of the timeline, and feel free if you go just to jump in.
Okay. Just one quick question before you begin. You're going to start from the initial time you got this information, from
Correct.
The initial date.
Correct.
Not from the date we heard.
I don't know who the we is.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to let the deputy county judge speak, and I'm sure you'll be open to questions.
Absolutely.
So please go ahead.
Yep. So in December of 2022, an individual reached out to county executive's office. They at that time were reporting allegations of sexual harassment occurring at the Jewish Federation.
What day was the date of that?
It was December 2022. The reporting individual came forward and indicated that there was a former employee at the Jewish Federation who had experienced sexual harassment during her employment at the Jewish Federation.
Who did she report that to?
It was a staff member in the county executive's office.
That's all we're going to say?
That is all I'm going to say. So this staff member immediately reported this to their supervisor. That's outlined in our sexual harassment policy. So during this initial conversation, there were no allegations tied directly to Ulster County employees or the role at Ulster County, his role with the Ulster County Human Rights Board. So in terms of the timeline, jumping a little bit more in detail, so all correspondence were handled via phone or email correspondence. The complainant and staff met via phone and with the county executive's office, as I said, in December 2022. The complainant reported that they're being harassed. Again, it was at the Jewish Federation. Our office did inform Penrance of these allegations. In April, there were subsequent conversations with the complainant. At this point, these conversations were handled with the acting Human Rights Commissioner. She did provide information about reporting to the New York State Division of Human Rights. That's higher than our Ulster County Division of Human Rights, or Commission of Human Rights, sorry. So at this point, we didn't have any credible connection between the role at Ulster County or involving Ulster County employees. So as you'll see in our sexual harassment policy, we did not have the purview to move forward with a sexual harassment violation investigation of this individual based on the information that was given to us at that time. Penrock did remove the individual from their term. That was in August of 2023. Any questions? No, I don't know.
Any committee members have questions? If you would mind stating your name.
I just wanted to touch on what you touched.
Sure, of course.
You know, we discussed that the acting Human Rights Commissioner was notified. Can you just explain that again?
Sure.
At what time,
so that was in April. April of 2022.
And the office was notified of these allegations in 22.
Correct. In December of 22.
So do we know why there was such a stretch in between where the actual Human Rights Commissioner that was seated in that seat wasn't notified?
In the acting commissioner's capacity? I don't know exactly the timeline on when there was a change in the commissioner of, she was acting, so there was somebody who was put in as acting at that time. I don't know the time of the change in that commissioner's role. I do know there was a change.
That was last year.
Correct.
Right. What you're saying that in...
You're asking from December to April?
Yeah.
So during that time period, there was a lot of correspondence back and forth trying to figure out exactly what is the best pathway here. So looking at our sexual harassment policy, again, that's looking at employees and looking at things that are happening within our employment. There was a lot of discussion on could the county centrally refer to the New York State Division of Human Rights. That was not a pathway for us to take at that time. We don't have that power, unfortunately.
So it's not common practice for there to be that shared information with the acting governing body of the Rights Commission.
I think in this instance it was unique in that this person who the complaint was alleged against was on the Human Rights Commission. So that would not be an appropriate pathway. It would have been kicked to the New York State Division of Human Rights. That's what that comes.
And you're saying that they were informed to, they were guided and helped to take it to New York State?
During that conversation in April, they were guided and helped to take it to the New York State Division of Human Rights.
And they did?
It is unclear to us if they did. That would be on the complainant. The complainant would have that role to bring it, and we would not have found out if they had brought it directly to the Division of Human Rights.
It just seemed to me that they were upset with this, what they got from the county, and had it been explained to them, look, this person's on human rights, we don't feel appropriate to take it to human rights. Was that explained to the person?
I do believe that was explained during
the
conversation.
Take it to the state. The state has a
Division of Human Rights.
Division of Human Rights that can oversee this. But this person felt like they didn't get any help, according to what I'm hearing.
Yeah, so from what I'm reading as well, based on what I'm reading as well, that is a concern, and I do have some recommended solutions when I get to that a little bit later, what we're looking at to change there. That information was communicated, I know, in April. I do believe from the question about December to April, during that timeline, there was a lot of discussion on what can we look at, what can we do to assist here, and that's an area that we do want to clean up and check up on a lot of.
So when was Ken Roth notified?
Ken Roth was notified, I do believe, in January initially.
So right after. Right. But your own commissioner at that point wasn't notified. Ken Roth was notified.
I will check on that.
Why was that decision made not to notify the Commissioner of Human Rights in December?
I will follow up on that one. I do not have an answer to that one.
Because once it was a different commissioner, we notified the new commissioner.
Correct.
But we didn't notify the commissioner that was there. But we did notify the appointer.
Correct.
Good question.
Sure.
So you said that a lot of conversation was verbally. Was there anything in writing to the victim? Stating, you know, like, listen, we cannot handle this. This is not appropriate for us to handle. This should go to New York State Human Rights. Was there anything
A bit unique on this one. There was a reporting individual who brought this information forward, and then the complaint and all conversation with the complaint were held via phone. So there was not a direct communication, written communication back and forth with the complainant.
See, written back and forth would establish some kind of timelines.
Absolutely.
And, you know what I'm saying?
Either.
Instead of the verbal stuff, it would be in writing, at dates, and at times.
Absolutely.
Because I feel like something that's of a sexual harassment nature is not something that should be passed just verbally. It should be, everything should be documented in writing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's good. What was the former minority leader's response when you reached out to him about his appointment?
So I was not on that phone call.
Yeah.
That was with a former deputy county executive, so I'm not going to speculate on what was said on that phone call.
Do you get the sense that his decision is best just to keep him in the role?
Again, I cannot comment on a phone call. I was not on, unfortunately.
Okay. I'm just curious about, is it the position of the executive's office that he's really the person that would have been best to deal with it?
I'll get more into that kind of when I talk about some of the policy changes based on the way the Human Rights Commission is a little bit different from other roles. When you're in an expired term, you remain in that expired term until you're replaced. His term expired in December of 22. He then remained in that expired term through August of 23.
Would it have been possible to, like, create a vacancy by removing him?
Correct.
Okay, so that's something that minority leader could have done.
Yeah.
But did your sexual harassment policy refer to that in writing?
The bylaws, the Human Rights Commission bylaws, could refer to a process whereby the appointing member could ask somebody to step down, then a vacancy would happen, and then the bylaws would govern the filling of that vacancy.
Okay. Can I continue my line of questions?
Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Because we've had commissions in the past that have had members appointed to the commission that have had sexual harassment allegations against them. This isn't the only instance in very recent history of a member of a commission having an active sexual harassment report, but having a sexual harassment report that's been in the press, that's been known by the appointing people. I've seen this body be okay with that kind of appointment. It sounds like that might be what was happening here, where the minority leader was okay with the appointment, or perhaps didn't know all of the details at that time. And when the minority leader learned about the allegations in more detail, then he was able to move forward with replacing him. Mm-hmm. It sounds like there might be an issue where it's left to the discretion of the appointing member, in this case the minority leader, who might have been okay with it as it's been, people have seemed to be okay with appointing other people that have had sexual harassment reports about them onto commissions. So perhaps we'll learn more about how to deal with that.
Yeah.
Just state your name for the record.
Yes, my name is Carl Brown, the ex chairman of the Human Rights Commission. One thing I'd like to say is the 22nd, when this happened, who was notified?
In December of 2022,
yep.
The employee who took the initial call, immediate supervisor.
Was that the acting county executive?
No, that was a deputy county.
That was a deputy, and is there a reason why you can't tell us who that was?
That employee is no longer here. I think that has been covered in the press.
Working for another company now?
I believe he has left employment. Well, not speculate, yes. Okay. He has left employment.
All right. And what was the reason again why he didn't inform the Human Rights Commission of a commissioner, a commissioner that is sitting on the Human Rights Commission, that we have the authority to remove. After they're put on the commission from the legislature, the legislature doesn't have the authority to remove that person. It's on the commission themselves, through a vote, to remove that person. Again, I don't understand the dysfunctional government, the non-talking between committees, organizations that are employing somebody or having somebody work for them freely on the board that has sexual harassment allegations against them. Again, that sexual harassment policy that you got right now, that's only for the county, huh?
Correct.
It has nothing to do with where he was working for.
Absolutely.
So why are we bringing that up?
That was the subject of the request.
But we're missing the big point. Why haven't they notified the commission to take care of a person that was had allegations against sexual harassment?
I unfortunately cannot answer that.
No, but they said they were doing the investigating. Since when has the county executive put themselves in investigating authority?
Typically, the county exec's office does not conduct investigations.
Thank you. Then why didn't they turn it over to the Human Rights Commission?
I cannot answer that.
Well, we need to look at this because it seems to be that same person that left out of here, and we know who he is, the same person on ARPA funds that wouldn't give money to an organization, Harambe, that's been working here. Now, we have a situation in this government where certain people get a pass and certain other people that don't look like them don't get a pass. What are you going to do about it?
I can talk specifically
who's really unqualified to run certain positions.
We need to stay on top.
I'm just talking about the dysfunction. We need to talk. You got committees. You put committees out here. When you have a situation like that, turn it over to the committee. Have some trust that they know what they should be doing. That's all I'm going to say.
Mr. Malone.
Yeah, quick question. And look, that is a problem that some of this information seems to have been held on to. I think everybody agrees more should have been done. I also think it probably would have been appropriate to contact the commissioner because it was appropriate in 2023 in April to contact the commissioner. So why wouldn't it have been appropriate to contact the commissioner in 2022? What was the reason we didn't? One of the issues I have is there's three or four people still working in county government that have been named and involved that could answer all these questions that you can't answer. You just got here. And it seems like that's probably by design. We didn't send anyone down here. The person that we're talking about, that was the acting commissioner, that had a lot of issues from commissioners about how chain of command and things were handled and who they went to. That person's still employment, that's still employed. They could be down here answering some of these questions, but they're not. So we're getting a lot of, I'm not sure, I'll check back with you. And I think that's probably by design. And I want to commend the chair of this because this is the way the legislative body is supposed to work. We are supposed to look at these things. We are supposed to have special committees, hearings, investigations, especially with topics like these that are so important. But this is an example, I think, of what, you know, a lot of us get frustrated about. You know, they send the one, and you're the sacrificial lamb here, and I feel bad for you. You're doing the best you can, and you weren't here. Maybe if you weren't here, if you got that call, you probably would have called, right? You probably would have got off the phone and called the commissioner. But a bunch of people didn't. And if we're going to get to the bottom of it, we're going to fix things, we're going to have honest conversations that I think should probably lead to charter changes, something I went to the Charter Commission and talked about. Why do we have an executive, the most powerful person in the county that has all these relationships and oversees so much of the power? Why do they have so many more appointments and essentially control the Human Rights Commission? Why wouldn't the legislature have more appointments? Why do you want the most powerful person, people around the most powerful people that we need to protect the rank and file from? And I think that's a conversation we need to have. Maybe it should lead to a special subcommittee or special committee to go over possible charter changes with human rights. But it's not working. And this is the third or fourth big thing that's come out of human rights. We have two or three people here. There's more that resigned because of one of the people we're talking about that wasn't asked to come here today and answer questions. And there were other things, county employees, somebody working in DSS that went public with some horrible things, things involved in race and children and all these other things. And that person that we're talking about that should be here answering questions about how they handled this went to her superiors. By law and definition, she's not supposed to go and talk to and share what they're complaining about. She went to them. We have a problem with human rights. We have a problem with some appointees in this county that aren't here to answer. And if we're going to be a true legislative body with some oversight, then the people that need to answer the questions need to be sitting here answering the questions, not sending the new person sitting here to take all the arrows with all the plausible deniability. So there is more, I think, that we need to look into. I think eventually it should lead to some charter changes and some special committees. But I don't think we're going to get too much more out of this today because the people that can answer the questions aren't here.
Question for you. Do you think we should conduct another meeting in the future and have the people that are supposed to answer the questions come here to answer the questions?
And so the laws and rules, I think that'd be appropriate. I think to go look deep, to go a little further. And like I said, it would probably lead to some good conversations about charter changes and open it up human rights and some other things. I think we need to have a conversation about.
Yeah, I don't think we should talk about it today. The carpet on the carpet, you know.
We fixed it.
Let's do the kitchen. If you just scooch over so I can.
Sorry, yeah.
No, that's fine. No, thank you.
Do you want me to go into share the changes?
No, I have some questions first.
Okay, sure. Go ahead.
The sexual harassment policy you provided us,
yeah.
That's dated January 2019, right?
Correct.
And that's the current policy.
That is the current policy.
And that's the policy that was in effect during this situation.
Correct.
What role did you play in investigating the allegations?
None. Was not employed at the county.
Are there still employees at the county executive office who were involved in the investigation?
Who were involved? It was not investigated as it did not fall under the purview of sexual harassment. Are you asking who took the complaint?
He's not employed.
We'll get to whether it was. Your position is that it was not investigated.
My position is that it did not fit under the purview of the county sexual harassment policy for investigation. There was an intake with a complainant. There was a lot of conversations with that complainant, both over the phone and with a reporting individual through email. That information indicated that there was not an workplace employment sexual harassment happening at that time based on the complaint.
And was that decision communicated in writing to the whistleblower or the victim?
Not in writing. Everything was handled via phone.
Mm-hmm. And when did that decision that you were not going to investigate due to your alleged lack of capacity to do so, when was that communicated to the whistleblower or the victim?
It's my understanding that would have been the April phone call.
And who was on the April phone call?
The April phone call was with the acting commissioner, was with, at first, the reporting individual and the complainant and the county attorney's office.
I'm not sorry, the county.
And the county attorney's office.
Was the personnel office notified of these allegations?
No.
Is that required under the sexual harassment policy?
If the sexual harassment is in the workplace, absolutely. So if there's a complaint that comes through and there's any allegations involving an employee or a workplace sexual harassment policy, then absolutely.
Who made the decision not to notify the personnel office?
I cannot answer that one.
Who would know?
I could certainly talk to our chief diversity officer who was there at the time, but she was not involved in this until April.
And what was her name?
Kathy Lewis.
And she was involved in the April 2023 phone call?
Correct.
Along with the county attorney?
Correct.
Did the county attorney's office prepare any memorandums on this issue?
No.
No. Any emails?
None.
Any legal advice?
Any what was that?
Legal advice?
None that I have written or legal advice. No. No official legal advice.
Who made the decision that this allegation could not be investigated?
I cannot answer that one.
Because you don't know?
Because I was not here. I was not part of that decision-making process.
You know, that's really disturbing because in my letter to your office dated February 1st, I asked for someone to attend this meeting who had complete knowledge of this incident. And as Leslie Mulley said, you started in November of 23.
No, technically I started in December of 23.
Last month?
Pretty much.
Oh.
No, January
was sometime. Well,
too. Your office is admitting that complaints were sent to RAF and must be right?
No. That's not within our policy to be verbal.
The sexual harassment policy calls for a full written documentation of the investigation.
Correct.
Was there any written documentation of this investigation?
Again, this was not investigated as a violation of our sexual harassment policy.
Just trying to find it.
And policy protocols for a quote final termination, unquote, to be made. Was there a final termination made?
Again, this was not investigated as part of our sexual
harassment. Was the whistleblower or the victim ever informed about the conclusion of this matter?
I believe in April during the phone conversation.
In that conversation, they were referred to bring this matter to the New York City Division of Human Rights. Did anyone from your office meet privately with the commissioner?
With the commissioner?
With the person who was the subject of these allegations.
There were phone calls again. No in-person meeting.
Who was on phone call?
I believe it was the plaintiff and the governor of the United States.
You really did do an investigation, something like a verbal investigation.
With the person who was
the alleged
perpetrator.
Well, that I do not know.
Right.
Sorry, misheard.
Did anyone from the county call on this perpetrator?
I do not believe so. Again, I was directed to the appointing authority.
The claims of sexual harassment were submitted to Baltimore since 2024. In this case, you mean sitting on the floor?
No. Since again, this was not part of our sexual harassment.
So four other?
Yes, four other.
How many of those claims were substantiated?
Two.
Are any claims under review?
No.
And who makes these investigations?
Typically, if it's a violation, if there's any kind of sexual harassment in the workplace, that is immediately reported to personnel that went under policy. Personnel will conduct the investigation unless there's some type of conflict. If, for example, it's going to be in the personnel office, is part of the harasser, or is part of that complaint, that will be then picked up for external counsel for investigation.
What role did Chris Kelly play in this investigation?
So Chris Kelly was the supervisor at the time. He was acting. He was deputy county executive at the time.
And what role did he play?
He was the supervisor who the staff member initially reported this complaint to, and then he also communicated back and forth with Loke, the reporting individual. I do not believe he was in any phone calls with the complainant directly. A lot of communication back and forth with the reporting individual.
Did he make any determination that this matter could not be investigated?
Again, based on the information that was provided to both him and the staff member, it was determined that this didn't fall under our policy.
Would it make sense for that in writing to the whistleblower and the victim and say, hey, well, you know, we can't do this and you're going to stop?
I would agree.
Any further questions?
From us or from the public?
Looking at this final legislation front of me. Any comments?
I've got several that I'm trying to sort of create an inventory here. Do volunteer employees serve at will? And if they serve at will, or I guess under any circumstances, can we clarify who can remove them under what circumstances? And as volunteers, would they fall under personnel, or is that right? Like there's a gray area there I'm unclear of. Are there any circumstances under which the executive's office has investigatory purview? And if so, what are they? Is that clear anywhere? And how is it possible that we don't have something in writing that says that all communication, whether it's verbal or however it's communicated, is followed up with in writing? Like, as we discussed, do you agree? Everything.
Do volunteer employees serve at will? So in this situation, this individual is on the Human Rights Commission. So they're appointed based on the charter. That's the legislative body, right. What you were in the beginning. They're appointed based on the charter. Those individuals serve during their term. At the expiration of their term, if they're not replaced, they serve the remainder of that time until they're replaced. Or they resign.
Correct. I was actually one of them for a while. But what I'm unclear.
A volunteer, somebody in like a volunteer titling, that would just be an at will volunteer.
Right. But at will according to whom? Right. Like of course if I'm a commissioner, I can say I can't do this anymore. I have to resign. What I'm trying to figure out is there anything codified that determines what it would take to remove somebody, right? Like, is it an at-will employee? Is it, what are the circumstances in which somebody can be removed from one of those volunteer positions? It's easier when there's clear personnel
implications. If it's a board, it's obviously going to be determined based on their bylaws. If it's just a volunteer who's currently at a OFA, that's an at-will. So then they can be said, we don't need your services anymore, or we need your services over at this department.
So
volunteer would be more considered the at-will.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Was the staff member that reported this an employee of the county?
Yes.
Yeah. So I don't understand, under the sexual harassment policy, if she was an employee.
The staff member who took the complaint?
The staff member who...
The alleger, no, she did not.
No, she did not work.
She did not, okay. And... my next question is the volunteer that who was the perpetrator, or whatever. I would think that the county would hold some kind of liability if this man is volunteering on the county board, right? Could the county be sued over the such thing? And I think that's big. I mean, if you're holding liability,
our policy is,
and we know it's got to be changed. You just can't have volunteers coming in and doing this. It's just a side. We've got to change something.
Well, you know something happened, and we didn't know about it.
Right.
And he did something sexually wrong with somebody else. Mm-hmm.
And the lawyers come.
What did you do to remove this person or report it?
They say zero.
Nothing.
Just to be super, super clear, like the allegations weren't related to his service to the county. If he had done something in the context of his service to the county, that would have been investigated, correct? Like, it is definitely the policy of the county executive's office.
What did he do? Is this personal, I think?
Yeah, it is.
Private employment.
Private
employment. Yeah, that's the whole thing, because he was a human rights issue.
Yeah.
My name is Tom Wilson. I want to just speak on something that I think I'll just speak on something that I was a pressing person at this time. One of the things that I'm asking the committee to pay attention to and to focus on is that, although, yes, a situation happened in this individual's work placement, but it did affect us as a Human Rights Commission to the point where I had to monitor the absence of this individual, which we have a policy in the Human Rights Commission. Somebody's absent for a certain amount of time and you can't get a hold of them, it affects votes, it affects a lot of things. So for the Human Rights Commissioner to not to be notified, even if I have to hold that in silence until further notice, it would have helped us understand why this individual's absent so many times and why I'm chasing them down to try to get this individual in. To the point where people get frustrated because we're asking questions, right? So I do want to say that is a part of something to consider, that, you know, it's not just about what happened in this one area. It did affect what we had to do in our area as well. So I'm hoping that they really put some type of communication line there for the future between the county exec and the Human Rights Commission itself, regardless of what it is, because it can affect the operation of, in which, you know, people were working at. Secondly, I was in a meeting where commissioners was told that They are county workers of the county. They were the employees of the county, and this came from Chris Kelly, I'm gonna say his name, and Joanna Contreras. In the meeting, they told commissioners that they are employees of the county. So if that's not so, then maybe that needs to be cleared up too, because that changed how commissioners was feeling, was thinking, and what they can do. So that has to be cleared up. Either they are employees of the county, or they are, or they ain't. You know, I don't see how, you know, doing this county work, there's not some ties to responsibility that the county will have for it not to be in that space. But that needs to be cleared up, because certain commissioners were told that they were employees of the county. So I do wanna say that. And last, and I'm gonna leave it at this, is that it's totally unacceptable. You know, mandated reporting, as far as I'm concerned, situations, and you can look up my story, right? Situations, when people talk about situations, there's things that is there that should be investigated inside and outside whenever we represent the county or not. So that should not work for some. That should work for all. And there's many directions, and I'll leave it at that, where this was not the case at all. And as a commissioner at the time, it left me in limbo on a lot of things that was happening.
Was compliance officer or the compliance committee involved at all?
No.
That has to be addressed as well. So this compliance stuff is
any further? Yes, Marsh.
I can speak to that. Marsh Gallagher, County Controller. We're actually in the middle of an audit of the compliance, corporate compliance program. I will tell you that there are a number of sexual harassment complaints that have come in through the program. I would say there is widespread confusion on behalf of county employees actually about where to go when complaints like this come, and I think that this is an example of that. Also, I want to note that sexual harassment policy does apply right now to volunteers of the county. I want to make that clear on the record so anybody here knows. The sexual harassment policy also defines sexual harassment in terms of where it can occur, as it can occur away from the workplace. So I think there is a gray area here. While the commissioner was not in his other workplace acting on behalf of the county, it may have called that into question. I want to note the sexual harassment policy for county employees is only available if you click the corporate compliance tab of our internal documents. So it is basically grouped under corporate compliance right now, which I think is why there is a number of corporate compliance complaints coming in about sexual harassment. I'll just conclude there. Thank you. We expect that it'll be several weeks, but the corporate compliance audit should go to management for comment within the next couple of weeks.
Thank you.
Can I just respond to that, Chair?
Yes.
So absolutely, volunteers are covered within our sexual harassment policy. What was unique here is that both the actions that were happening were not in our workplace, and it's a workplace sexual harassment policy. He was employed at the Jewish Federation. That's where these allegations were stemming from. The individual who brought the complaint forward, the complainant, was a former employee at the Jewish Federation, indicated this was happening during her employment at the Jewish Federation. So our purview based on our policy doesn't allow us to go and conduct an investigation on behalf of the Jewish Federation to determine if there's workplace sexual harassment occurring at that location, at that job. Has it bled into his role here, or was a county employee? Then absolutely.
I could read the where can sexual harassment occur section of the policy, which is in section numeral 2D. And the end of that paragraph says calls, text, emails, and social media uses can constitute or contribute to unlawful workplace sexual harassment, even if occurring away from the workplace premises or not during work hours. I understand what the deputy county executive is saying, why it led to a gray area. This particular language probably should be cleaned up to address this exact issue.
Based on that read, I mean, it's clear, like, the crux of that line could be that it can occur outside, but the crux can also be that it says instances of workplace sexual harassment can occur outside of the workplace. I don't think there's any context where this is considered workplace sexual harassment for the Ulster County workplace. The question is whether all sexual harassment for folks that have a involvement with the county are the responsibility of the county to investigate. That said, what I would like to have strengthened up is when we as a legislative body make appointments, you know, we're choosing people that we feel represent a certain part of the community, that have a certain experience in their lives, that have a certain skill set that is going to be relevant to that role. This is particularly relevant in the human rights capacity, where you want folks that are, you know, ready to engage with the public. I know that as majority leader of one of my appointments, had a sexual harassment claim in their workplace, and it wasn't a Ulster County workplace harassment claim, but it was a harassment claim. I would be very uncomfortable with her continuing to serve. I would, if we're talking about charter revisions, and if not the case that the minority leader could have removed him, then that's something that I would like to see addressed. I suspect in this case the minority leader could have removed him because his term had expired. All he would have needed to do is appoint someone else. Obviously, yeah, so we can't speculate why the former minority leader didn't replace him. But I know that that's something that even if someone's term isn't expired, I would like to see us have the ability to make sure we have someone in that role that we trust, because they are acting as a representative of you know, we were elected to make those kinds of decisions. And if something has changed for that person and the reasons why we would have appointed them, I want to make a different decision and have a different person in that role. It's possible the minority leader could have done that in this case. But if that's something that we don't have the power to do as in the charter, I would like to see that change.
Absolutely. Chair Cox. What legislator you tell is pointing to is what strikes me as the problem here is it's so complicated. And if this complaint comes in and the person works at a different workplace, how do we investigate that complaint? We don't have access to that workplace. We don't have access to the staff that might be able to corroborate. So to do an investigation from that distance seems difficult. Even if we had laws written that we were empowered to do so or had an obligation to do so, the people that can investigate are at that workplace. Whether we can do more, as Legislator Uchitel is suggesting, and perhaps, you know, put somebody on temporary leave of absence and tell them, until we get something from your workplace where we've been informed of this charge, we need to have you not in this role. But I see the possibility of people getting a complaint somewhere, and we're starting to act on it before that complaint has been investigated, and when we don't have a ready or even a difficult way to investigate. So I'd like us to craft something that helps protect the public better, and I think that, you know, the language that the comptroller brought in is helpful, because we could say to that person, look, this could be considered like you were sexually harassing somebody at a bar. Happens to be your workplace instead of a bar, but if we hear about it, we have to take it seriously. And so it sounds like there's potential under our current framework to get tangled up trying to respect everybody's rights and not necessarily provide enough protection and absolutely documentation. I mean, anybody who was involved in this should have documented every phone call along the way. I just want to say that if the complainant or the reporter to us called by telephone, then the tendency may be to respond by telephone rather than in email or in writing. But in this arena, it's prudent, and I think our procedure should require the written response, as the deputy executive said earlier in response to a question.
Mr. Douglas. What I want to just say, I stepped down from this year, and the main reason why I stepped down is because of lack of communication, because of this finite gray area that we're talking about, and as I'm seeing, it's not only a problem that was with the Human Rights Commission. It seems like it's a problem within the county itself, right? And you know, when you have cases that come before you and this gray area determines whether you can do the right thing as you serve, because we're here for the community, right? And that's the reason we weren't getting paid. So like Tyrone was saying, we were, I was one of those people that was told that I was a county employee. I have not cashed a check yet, right? But what I'm saying is that's fine, right? I'm here to serve. But the point of the matter is that our compensation in serving is getting the work done for people who need us to do it, because we are the voice of the people. We are the representation of the people. You understand what I'm saying? And to have us called liars because of what we stepped down for, to have it be said that we were doing it maliciously because of what happened to Tyrone Wilson, it's very egregious, right? Mm-hmm. And now we're sitting here today and you're put into that seat to answer questions that you really cannot answer, right? Mm-hmm. And the last thing I just want to say is that something has to be done. You know, when we're talking about people's lives and we're talking about the ripple effect of it, there can't be any gray area. It has to be black and white. We have to be able to define it. We have to be able to address it and solve it, or do something towards it. And that's the position that we were in sitting on that committee. We were in a position where, you know, sexual harassment is just a topic today. But we were talking about racial attacks that we were told that we could not deal with because it was verbal. It was not on paper. But now I'm hearing you, if I'm to stand corrected, that something verbal can be addressed.
In terms of sexual harassment, yeah, absolutely. In terms of sexual harassment.
Well, here's another gray area. So
potentially. I think we would want to look at our...
I'm not debating with you. Yeah. I'm just telling you that if we're having a conversation and there's no clarity on that, can you imagine myself, who is not adept legally, mm-hmm. to say whether or not, right? We're just here to serve. And when we see somebody else lose their job based on somebody's verbal comment, saw somebody lose their job because of what somebody else said that was not investigated, and to see that now we're in a gray area where we're playing around, unfortunately, and I am not trying to be use a racial card here, but it just seems that when there's gray area, it's black people who are always the one who falls short when there's gray area. We cannot afford gray area. We just can't afford that, you know, and I say that respectfully.
Any further questions?
Last question.
Yes.
And it's entirely up to you, but I feel like we haven't gotten any answers that we came here to get, because like you said before, somebody was sent here, and not your fault once again, but you probably sat there this afternoon. When they ask you this, tell them this. I don't know how your day was, but we need to get some answers, I think. I think we maybe touched the tip of the iceberg here, and I want to know what the consensus was to get somebody in the room like the chairman had requested that was involved or knows what happened.
Any further questions? Mr. Malone.
Just to build upon that, first I'd quickly like to say that I've heard the minority leader mentioned a lot. Nothing's documented. We have no idea. All I've heard the minority leader say is something was mentioned to him, could have been in the hallway in passing. That guy you appointed heard something about him. That's all I've heard. So to try to throw this at his feet at times, I think, is a little unfair, because nothing was documented. The real calls, the specifics, came into the executive branch of government. These individuals that are here that stepped down from human rights very publicly were called liars, I believe. They complained about two people. They basically stepped down because of Chris Kelly and Essie.
Absolutely.
They put it out there publicly. It was covered up. A couple months later, same issues, Chris Kelly and Essie. They can't. One doesn't work here, one does. They're not at this meeting, and we're not getting any answers. Will there be accountability? Why wasn't were we ever going to get the answer of why in December 2022 was not appropriate to contact the Commissioner of Human Rights, but in 2023 it was, when there was someone else there different, mm-hmm. that there was lots of complaints about them not doing anything about human rights complaints and violations. Are we ever going to get to the bottom of that? Is there ever going to be accountability? Is she ever going to be sitting here and answering our questions?
She should be.
Should there be accountability? I sure as hell think there should be, and it's not just about this one case we're talking about. Mm-hmm. It's other cases. The last thing I'll say is we do have to get to the bottom of corporate compliance because we have the same issues. Corporate compliance has nothing to do with hotlines and whistleblowers and all this stuff. Corporate compliance is a very different thing. The reason we hired this firm and the legislature has approved contracting this firm has nothing to do with this weird poster that's hanging up all over the county with a cartoon bat phone and the mention of problems with legislators. Calls going into all kinds of phones over at the county attorney's office with no protections for whistleblowers. We have a problem here. The executive branch of government has a problem with whistleblowing, wanting whistleblowers to call them in ways they shouldn't want them to call them, not protecting whistleblowers. We have a problem with human rights. That's for darn sure. So I do think we need some special meetings to deal with, and they intertwine with human rights. How they're appointed, what we're doing, our sexual harassment policy, what we do with that, and corporate compliance and what we've tried to turn corporate compliance into. And it seems like the executive branch of government has way too much involvement in people complaining and controlling these complaints and what happens. And they fail and fail and fail. And I think this is an example of who they sent here. They know they failed, and they're protecting people that have failed people. People have been failed, people have been taken advantage of, people have not been protected, and the people that were supposed to do something didn't, and they're supposed to be sitting here, and they're not.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. The Deputy County Executive has anything further to say.
So I do have what we were going to discuss about policy updates. So I'm hearing that, go ahead. So one of the things that we really do want to address in terms of our sexual harassment policy, Marge had brought it up as well, is really clarifying and strengthening the policy. What needs to happen is we really need to make sure we do annual training on the policy, but we really need to update the policy and put it in a user-friendly format that everybody can understand exactly what they can and what they can't do. Because unfortunately, if you can't act as we discussed, you need to be able to communicate that very efficiently and effectively all the time. Part of the other updates that we want to discuss, and obviously the recommendations would come before the legislature does policy, would be to talk exactly, Legislator Uchitel said, about what are we doing about appointments. They need to be specifically called into the sexual harassment policy. Right now, board members fall under this volunteer. That doesn't seem to be a really strong use of that word, and that can create another additional gray area that we really don't want in a sexual harassment policy. Looking specifically at if there was an allegation that came forward and it was a county employee an Ulster County appointee, and there were allegations of sexual harassment in the workplace, we need to be able to do swift investigation and swift action. Going back to the appointing officers and saying this happened and expecting them to be able to take action that may or may not work. And we need to make sure that we as a body can actually make sure the board, volunteers, board, commission, everybody, training on the new policy.
Yes, Marcia.
I'd like to just add to that there is a substantial percentage of county employees that are required to do training that do not do it on an annual basis, and there's absolutely nothing done about it. We need to have consequences for employees that do not, and volunteers, whoever is required to do the training who doesn't do it, it's only as good as we enforce the policy. So we can mandate additional people comply, but the corporate compliance audit is going to show that there's a substantial number of people who aren't doing it at this time.
Sure. Simply as an observer, John Quigley, all the recommendations that we just heard didn't address the situation that actually played out, which was lack of being able to apply to this policy, because as they understood, the policy didn't even apply to their situation. So does the county executive's office even have a recommendation on how to account for that?
She just said it should be appointed. It needs to be clarified to include appointed people.
But no, not to the appointed people, but to the claimant being made. The claim being made wasn't even classified as falling under this policy.
Correct.
Correct.
We can never go into a private employer and conduct an investigation. We just don't have that purview. What we would look to do here to address what we saw in this specific situation would be the complainant came in. There was a complaint against a sitting Human Rights Commission member. If we investigate that and we do find that there's any overlap in that role with his employment at the county or the county employee, that we can then take immediate action based on the status, regardless of the status.
So I just want to, I think we might be getting at it, John, I'm glad you brought that up, because when we're talking about appointed boards, like when you have employees,
mm-hmm.
right? And if they were to do something in the community that you felt made it inconsistent with their role, then you might terminate them. If we have an appointed person who's a volunteer and they do something in the community, not a sexual harassment in the Ulster County workplace,
mm-hmm.
but whether it's in, let's say they got into a fight at a bar and it was like, you know, really did, made it so that you just really couldn't trust them in that role. They showed themselves to have a temper, something like that, right? This
mm-hmm.
is a complete hypothetical.
Yep.
You would want to be able to remove them from that role. If they were an appointed role where they were, you know, where it was somehow relevant that everyone in the community knew and they weren't comfortable going to them anymore about this because they were in an appointed role that deals with the community,
mm-hmm.
you would want to be able to take action against that. So I think that that's not necessarily a sexual harassment investigation,
right?
Right? But that is something where there's a totality of events that is inconsistent with them continuing in that role. And while the county might not be in a position of doing a sexual harassment investigation in that, we would want to be able to remove that person. If it does become clear that, as a legislature, that we can't remove one of our appointments if they're doing something that's inconsistent outside of their work, outside of the Ulster County workplace, you know, that is something. So I would like to add that to the list very much.
Mm-hmm.
That you know, appointments are. I don't want someone to be able to get appointed to a board and then all of a sudden we can't recall them,
mm-hmm.
right? That they now are governed by the bylaws in that board, because those bylaws could change, right? And they could
yeah.
just build a fortress around themselves. And I don't want to, the legislature, speaking for the legislature and wanting to have, wanting to preserve the legislature's prerogative to choose people that represent us out there in the community, and by us, I mean our constituents, right, then I would want to see that, have that be one of the changes that's discussed.
So a moral turpitude clause.
It sounds like you're more skilled at this than I am already, but perhaps that is what we're talking about. Yeah.
And I think with the moral turpitude clause, we would need to discuss who has that authority then to invoke that clause. Does it go back to the appointing authority? Does it go back to the body? Does it go back to the commission? Who has that power? And that's part of where we need to clean that up.
Yeah, because you wouldn't want to be, as a legislator, wouldn't want to be in a position of leaving it up to the county executive to choose one of my appointments not being consistent with, I think that they are,
mm-hmm.
But that's just kind of me speaking from a perspective of legislative prerogative.
Yes.
Sure. Well,
one of the things we try to do, let me just say to what Legislative Tech has said, you also should be careful about, how you tallying up what people say about what people is doing in the community. Because if it's just your constituents, that's not everybody. So I'm going to say that. So to everything else, there should be committees. This is why when I was an intern, I proposed to Pat and them about having a human rights commissioner with the legislators who's appointing together, interviewing these individuals together, right, so that we're all on the same page. I have done this already as a trial. With some of the appointees here, I sat in the meetings with the legislators and questions was asked and everybody felt good about the individual and the individual was on. It was still the legislator appointee. But what happens is the legislator appoint a person, but it's the human rights commissioner that's dealing with the individual throughout the year. So you're not the legislator, unless there's some reports coming, there's not much that they know of the same individual that they appointed. So there's more things to make it more eyes on everyone that's appointed, where it's not just coming from one person's decision, because that's brutal. You know, I don't even think that's even fair, right? So I'm hoping that something of that caliber will also be added to, if something like this comes up, who are the governing bodies that sits on that and help make that decision. Because, I mean, somebody could go in and say, hey, Tyrone just punched somebody in the face on the corner, and what are you going to do with that? You know, is that in your feeling, you have the right, you have the power to be like, well, you're gone because you're in your feeling, you have the authority to do that? We can't have that, right? So there's more deeper rooted things that need to be touched on as far as this situation. And I applaud y'all for even having this conversation. I applaud you for calling it, because I think it's so much needed to have that type of discussion. This is a discussion we were trying to have a long time ago. but I'm glad that it's happening now. And I also want to say that the commission does have a protocol there. If a commissioner is in any type of situation, whatever, the human rights commissioner can step a person down temporarily while investigations is happening. I even said that I'm going to use my own self. When the commissioner had the right, my situation had the right to be brought to the commission. And I could have been investigated by the commission. The problem is here that the executive office ignores the commissions and the jobs that they have to do. I don't understand why we even have a human rights commission if we're not going to bring these cases for them to investigate, for them to look into, for them to work and make decisions, because it does not happen. And when it did happen, we had to fight for that. And when we did do it, we was pretty much lashed about, you know, you're overstepping. Right? So if why do we have the commission here if investigation is not going to be brought to them in-house, out-of-house, wherever it is? That they are the commission. They are the human rights commission. This is a human rights situation. So I'm just asking that the committee here, you know, even tap into that when you're dealing with the executive office about the respect and the dignity that they're showing to the Human Rights Commission. Give them the authority to investigate.
Deputy County Executive, any further?
Yeah, so just in terms when there's instances of conflict, it makes it extremely difficult to bring a matter back to the committee. This instance here, there was the conflict. When there is that conflict, you inherently need a process where you can go beyond that conflict to have a fair and partial review, investigation, that sort of thing. So absolutely, the Human Rights Commission has power to investigate. However, when there is that conflict, we need another pathway. That pathway is the New York State Division of Human Rights. That is their function. They serve above the counties in that capacity. But you would always need that potential pathway.
Sure.
As a former chair, I agree with you 100%. That is a pathway, but you should at least allow us the respect. And I understand what you're saying, Abe. I don't think we need to architect the charter. The charter should be set for the operation of government. I think the communication needs to be enhanced a little bit more. We had a situation before with a person that was using racial epithets on the internet. We found out about it. The commission then, myself, called the legislature who put him on there and said, we got a problem right here. We're going to have to remove this guy. We're going to go in session to remove him. What do you think? Do you have somebody else here or whatever the case may be? We had a conversation. They were okay with us removing him, and they allowed us to do our job. If you allow certain these committees to do their job and do the communication, this is going to work. And to answer your question also, Chairman, you wanted information that wasn't told to you on December 22nd. I think, you know, at that particular time, not only Tyrone Wilson was the acting commissioner at that time, the paid commissioner, I was the chair, Joanna Contreras, I think you should ask her to come to the office, but she was in control at that time. And she may be able to shed some light on a lot of these questions that you're talking about. You're talking about December 22nd. Jen Metzger was not in office at that particular time. She's the person.
I appreciate the insight there, sir. That's very helpful.
Thank
you. Any question? Yes, President Noah.
I would just ask us to look at where we put our energies and how beneficial it is for some of the details that people seem to think that they need to have to be sought. Moving forward from what I've heard both prior to this meeting and in this meeting, it seems clear where the problem points are, and there are some fairly clear things that we could do to move forward to fix them. It's the legislature who wrote this policy and didn't address what to do in the instance where there's a complaint brought about activity outside the workplace that's not related to the workplace. I believe it is covered by New York State law, and I think it gave us as a county the right to do something on this, and we didn't. Clear in our own heads. So I think we can fix that And that's where I would prefer to have our energies go, is how we change this policy, make it better, and hear what we've been hearing about better communication with a commission that is set up to deal with exactly these kinds of issues.
In closing, real quick, my last statement. I do think it matters. You're talking about human rights. It's the most powerful. You're protecting the rank and file of the most powerful. And I think there are questions here unanswered. Why did we sit on this? Why didn't we document anything? Why didn't we sit on this? I'm not sold that you're not allowed to pass this along to human rights to deal with themselves on some level. We have, all we know is these people that complained are still upset and feeling like they got no real representation and proper processes weren't involved. We did, after we removed a human rights commissioner that may have acted on this and done something, we waited and passed it along to somebody else. So I'm under the impression that this person that these accusations are against was recommended by the former vice chair of the legislature, who's now the chair of the legislature, to the minority leader. Then complaints came out to high-ranking people in the executive branch of government. They sat on it for months and months and months until they removed the commissioner that may have done something about it, gave it to a commissioner that sat on it as well. We do have a problem. People weren't protected, and the most powerful people in the county were the people that didn't protect them. So something has to come out of this, not just verbiage in a policy, but we need to take away control of the most powerful in this county from human rights, which is supposed to protect the least powerful. And this is why this is why it's a problem, because you had a handful of very powerful people maybe protecting somebody that they had a relationship with. Otherwise, how do you explain one commissioner doesn't get told about it that I believe would have acted on it, and you wait months, and as soon as another commissioner comes in that doesn't act on it, you share it with them? Why? What is the difference there? Can somebody explain to me?
They moved his office.
Yeah.
That's the most critical thing. You just said it's the most powerful. Your office needs to be here in this building.
Jim, that's why. Further discussion by members of this committee on this.
Mr. Chairman, can I say a word if you don't mind?
Mr. Roberts.
Thank you. I wasn't going to comment on this, but since the former minority leader was brought up several times, I did ask him, have a conversation with him about this whole incident, and he had told me as soon as he had specific allegations about the accused, he made efforts and steps to remove him. So that would be his timeline, and that specific came in late July, early August.
Thank you. I think that we do need to update our policy and look forward to working with you and the executive office on that. So thank you. Any other new business? I just want to update the committee. Yesterday, Deputy Chair and I met with Commissioner Quigley and Commissioner Torres at the Board of Elections, working on a couple of proposals that they hope to bring before this committee in March. One of them is extending their term from 2 years versus currently 4 years. And the other is a form of automatic increase in
mandatory minimum.
I'm sorry, thank you. Mandatory minimum in staffing based on the number of enrolled or registered voters in the county. So you will be seeing that in March. Any other new business?
Yes. Motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn. Second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Thank you. You're adjourned.
Ways and Means in 10 minutes, we'll give them.
Thank you.